Talk Central is brought to you by BlackBerry.
Hi, this is Diplo. I'm just out there mixing ideas and mixing up different genres. I can't believe that people are actually paying me to travel across the world and build new sounds, different artists. The BlackBerry Torch makes it simple because I'm always staying in touch with everybody, whether it's using Twitter applications or Facebook. A lot of these guys, I have a closer relationship now because I'm constantly on BBM talking to them.
Pop.
I love what I do. And a BlackBerry Torch helps me do it.
Welcome to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Candace Jones. Hi, Candace.
Hey, Duncan.
We've got an extra special guest in the studio today.
Greetings.
Hi, Dave. Dave Hagen is the Deputy Chairman of the Southern African Digital Broadcasting Association and also Technical Director for Digital Terrestrial Television at Mnet.
Right. Spot on.
Great. And Dave, thanks so much for joining us today. We actually wanted to do a special episode of Talk Central to look into the whole issue of digital terrestrial television now that government has made a firm decision on the direction we're going to take in terms of digital standards. Just to paint a bit of background, you'll recall, and if you've been reading Tech Central, that South Africa has been through quite a controversial process over the last year where we considered different technical standards for digital terrestrial television, and there was a lot of lobbying that we saw from both the Brazilians and the Japanese who were keen for the country to adopt their standard. But a couple of weeks ago, Communications Minister Roy Padiachi announced that the country will be adopting the second generation of the European standard for digital terrestrial television. This mustn't be confused with satellite TV. This is specifically for terrestrial broadcasts for channels like Mnet, ETV, and the SABC. Dave is probably the expert when it comes to digital TV in South Africa. And Dave, thanks so much for joining us. And hopefully we're going to be able to use this time to clear up some of the misconceptions and perhaps talk about some of the challenges for both the broadcasters and what consumers can expect out of this whole process. But I thought it'd be a good place perhaps to kick off, given the recent decision to choose the second generation of the European standard known as DVB-T2. Why was it so important for Mnet and the commercial broadcasters, which were lobbying so strongly for the European standard? Why was it important that the country went that way rather than choose some other standard?
Duncan, it's an interesting question. It's been a long process, as you said. Digital terrestrial TV has been in South Africa since 2000 and 2001, believe it or not. Centec and Orbicom ran trials back then using DVB-T, MPEG-2. And Centec ran those trials, funny enough, for 8 years up to 2008. We went through a lot of lobbying, and we went to the Geneva GO6 conference in 2006, and all the ITU countries and the SADC countries got together and worked out the frequency plan and adopted the DVB-T standard at the time. So it was paving the way already that digital terrestrial and TV in Southern Africa and SADC countries will be DVB-T. That process then went through the digital migration process, where we started lobbying the government and we did economic studies, technical studies, and started preparing for digital migration. And unfortunately, a lot of delays have happened, and it's embarrassing for South Africa in some ways that it's taken so long. We went through 9 months of delay re-looking at the frequency plan that was agreed at the GO6 convention. We went through extra delays now for almost 11 months debating whether ISDBT is the right standard or should we adopt DVB-T. And there's been a lot of retractions of the regulations. As you know, first regulations were issued, then ICASA was almost sued, and they were retracted those regulations. So there's been a lot of stopping and starting, and it's put confusion into the market, and the market lacks confidence now. However, in the beginning of 2010, this debate started whether we should revisit the broadcast standard that has been adopted as DVB-T. And initially, obviously, the broadcasters and everybody in the industry was up in arms because it was going to put further delays into the industry, further confusion.
Why do you think it was being considered at that point?
I'm not sure. You know, there's a lot of speculation and debate about it. I think there was a strong lobby from Japan and Brazil. Okay. In the first colloquium where they showed a map of the continent of Africa with a big black hole over there with no DVB-T decisions, which was very incorrect at the time. Mauritius, Lesotho, and Namibia have been running, with South Africa been running trials for some time. But be that as may, the process has been a long, arduous process. There's been a strong lobby. It's been robust. I think it's been professional in some ways. And I think the pros and cons of it, just before we get to the reasons, is that it has pulled SADC countries together. The 15 or 14 SADC countries have stood united, have gone through a lot of lobbying and evaluation in the last 9 months or so, and it really has put all the ministers of communication in SADC around the table, and they better understand digital migration. What it has also done, as I said, is a bit of confusion, uncertainty in the market. But the positives around it is that we've been able to leapfrog from DVB-T to T2. Mm. And we'll discuss a bit later the advantages to the consumer and to the country of DVB-T2. But it really has given us the ability, and we can moan about the delays and things, but we've been given an opportunity now to go T2. Mm. Really, from a broadcaster's perspective, they were lobbying against ISDBT for a number of reasons. The cost of the set-top box would be a lot higher, because it's a very niche market, ISDBT.
That's the decoders that we need to watch. Correct. The
right name is a decoder. Set-top box is not really a nice name anymore. So the decoder price of ISDBT would be substantially more than DVB-T or T2, because it's such a small market. Mm. And worse still, the ISDBT standard at the time was a 6 megahertz standard, which doesn't fit into the GEO-6 plan for the region 1 in the rest of the continent of Africa. So we were expecting much longer delays than we're going to have now. Set-top box higher, and it offered no technical advantage over DVB-T. Mm. If there was a profound technical advantage of ISDBT over DVB, we would have considered it. But they're exactly like for like.
It's the same generation of standards.
It's the same generation of standard, and it was just posing delays. A lot of investment has gone into the country. As I said, we've been running trials since 2000,
yeah.
2001. Yes, those trials have been terminated. There's been new trials since November 2008. And one can equate the amount of money, but there's time, resources, expertise, development, learning gone into DVB-T. And that would be wasted. You would start afresh again.
Okay. So the decision to adopt T2 instead of the original DVB-T standard, what benefits does that bring to both to broadcasters and to consumers?
Right, so DVB-T2 is a second generation terrestrial standard. DVB-T means digital video broadcast terrestrial. There's H for handheld, S for satellite, C for cable. So it's a terrestrial based transmission facility or platform, this. And DVB-T2 was announced, its standard was approved in May 2010. So it really is a very new second generation standard that brings huge advantages, more so for the country and the broadcasters than the consumer. But what it does is, in one analog spectrum of 8 megahertz, you typically have one television service. With DVB-T, you would have 12 television services digitized in that capacity. And T2, with very good compression systems called MPEG-4 and different modulation schemes, you can put at least 20 digital services in the same capacity as DVB-T or an analog service.
That would be standard definition.
Yes, you're quite right. So 20 standard definition services in a DVB-T2 8 megahertz slot.
Is that what we call, what broadcasters call a mux?
Correct.
Okay.
So multiplex is a technical device that takes many channels and compresses them together and gives you one stream, which is a combination of channels. The regulator and ICASA rightly so call a mux these days, a set of frequencies. Okay. So there's two muxes allocated in South Africa, mux 1 and mux 2, which is an 8 megahertz slot each. And with DVB-T2 now, you could have 20 channels on mux 1, 20 channels on mux 2. So the country
40 channels
will be exposed to 40 channels once the migration process starts.
Unless we do HD.
Unless you do HD, we can speak about that. So T2 offers, firstly, a lot more capacity. And it might sound great that you're adding channels, but after migration, if you wanted to add more television services on T, you might have had to adopt a third mux. Okay. Let's say you wanted 36 channels, you would have to get a third mux for that. Now you don't need that spectrum anymore. So you're going to give that spectrum back to the regulator after your migration process. So this is far more frequency and spectrum efficient post-migration. which opens up, and it's a natural source, these frequencies, opens up those frequencies to mobile operators, mobile Wi-Fi, wireless Wi-Fi networks, and whoever needs that spectrum.
This is the digital dividend spectrum, which everyone talks about.
So this T2 discussion has far more profound effects post-migration on what the government can do with all this frequency afterwards.
Which spectrum are we looking at specifically? What spectrum is going to be freed up in this country for telecommunications purposes after migration?
So the spectrum that DVB or terrestrial TV works in is the VHF, very high frequency band, and the ultra high frequency band from channel 21 to 69. Now the spectrum that's going to be freed up is all across that band as we start closing down the analog services and start switching on the digital services. But the 790 band, 790 megahertz up to 69, is very sought after and required by the telecom operators.
Yes.
And part of this migration is to make sure that gets freed up as soon as possible to hand it over to those operators so they can use it.
I just wanted to ask. I was actually having a conversation with someone about this the other day, and Henk Kleinhans, who runs a local Wi-Fi operation, was saying to me that was wrote a piece for Tech Central talking about white spaces and how this can be freed up for telecommunications operators even while the broadcast is still happening. Now, I know that Neotel, for its CDMA network, is using the 800 megahertz band and using some technology called interleaving. I hope that's the right term. Is there a possibility that the telecommunications operators could use more of this broadcasting spectrum before digital migration is completed?
It's a heated debate. We've had public hearings at ICASA whether you can share the spectrum, and as a broadcaster my answer would be no. I'm sure they're going to say yes. The problem is that broadcasting in as we know it is high power transmitters transmitting a lot of radiation to TV sets or set-top boxes or decoders, where mobile operations has a very different network configuration. And you could have a phone very next to, close to a transmitter, and you would start getting interference between these high-powered fixed transmitters and mobile devices. So in theory, it doesn't work, and it shouldn't work. But, you know, hopefully this migration process gets going. If there are further delays and things, one might have to look at this sharing model. But I hope not. Just the other advantage of T2.
Yep.
So it is a very, very complex technical standard. It offers huge technical benefits about regionalization. It offers high definition, which a T1 doesn't do. But what it also does is quite a complex thing called guard band interval. And in digital, you can run all your transmitters on the same frequency in a geographic area called a single frequency network. So straight away, that also uses far less spectrum. In analog, you would have to use every second frequency because they would interfere with each other. And they can't be on the same frequency in the same area. You'd have to give hundreds of kilometers distance before you could use the same frequency. But digital offers cleverness. All the satellites, all the transmitters are locked to GPS satellite and they synchronize to the master station.
Oh, wow.
And in Johannesburg, on the trial at the moment, all four transmitters are running on channel 54, all linked together, and all that other frequencies that you would use for analog, you don't need anymore. So again, the digital dividend, whether it's DVB-T or ISDVT or T2, would be far more efficient.
Mm.
But what T2 does, it's called the guard interval length, allows you to make that single frequency network 130% bigger than DVB-T. So you could have the whole of Gauteng or the greater Gauteng on one frequency, which is delivering 20 channels instead of 60, 70 different frequencies to deliver the same service.
Hmm.
So again, post-migration, lots and lots of these 8 megahertz slots will go back to the regulator for auction or reuse.
Okay.
So those are the three main things. High definition, added more channel capacity, and bigger single frequency networks. The high definition affects the consumer and the broadcaster, and the other two really is efficiency and giving back a bigger dividend.
Okay, great. Candace, feel free to chime in any time with questions. But Dave, I know you've been, MNET and is it ETV, have been trialing in Soweto. You've been trialing the DVB-T2 technology. Can you tell us a little bit about that trial and what you've learned from it?
Sure. So MNET was licensed in November 2008, and so was Centec and SABC to run the second set of DVB-T trials. And we all launched happily in December of 2008. And SABC runs a trial off the Brixton transmitter network. I think they've got it in Pretoria and in Durban, I think. And Emmet did the same thing with Orbicom. We ran a DVB-T trial in Cape Town, Durban, and Johannesburg. And we ran that trial very successfully up to the middle of 2010. We took our analog subscribers using the existing analog decoder. We had about 900 of them, and we issued them with a digital T1 decoder. And overnight, from Emmet and CSN, they had 12 channels. So they were very happy, and we got very positive feedback and research from the expectation of users when they have multi-channel. During the debate of ISDBT last year, ETV and Emmet, who are MUX2 partners, ETV has 50% capacity on MUX2, Emmet has 40% capacity on MUX2, as the regulations stand now. And we decided together, let us start testing, a technical test, proof of concept test, DVB-T2. We were obviously optimistic that we were going to get T2, and it was, in retrospect, the best decision we've ever done. Because that trial of DVB-T2, and we'll speak about the Soweto involvement, really did lobby, and we took in excess of 35 tours of SADC countries through the Soweto trial. And it just emotionally changes you. When you speak to a user in a low-cost house that's had 3 channels of TV and now has suddenly 20 channels of high-quality standard definition services, you really get the emotional feeling that this migration needs to get going. So ETV and Mnet collaborated, and in October last year, we switched off our T1 network in Johannesburg and converted that to T2. And we ran a proof of concept technical trial in Johannesburg. I had the most unique job in the world. I did a migration from digital back to analog. So all our trialists in Johannesburg that were running DVB-T, we went to them and said, sorry, the trial has come to an end. Give me back your T1 decoder, and we're going to give you an analog decoder back, and from 12 channels, you're going to get 2. So I can write a book about it, and I don't think any country in the world has done a digital to analog migration, but we have. But it was worth it. And we closed down the T1 trial in Joburg, and we converted that to T2. We launched one transmitter, the JSM Town Hillbrow. It's a 6,000 watt transmitter. It's got a nice big antenna on there, got great coverage. And we were in labs and in boardrooms testing T2. And then it struck us that the way to really demonstrate this is not in a boardroom, not in a lab, is to put it in the homes of people. And ETV and ourselves decided, let's go to a small section in Soweto. Soweto is known to SADC countries and the rest of the world. And we recruited 60 households. And the recruitment process was very interesting. We used a company called ProVantage that knows on the ground work in Soweto. Initially, our accreditation wasn't very good, and people thought it was a scam and a bit skeptical. But once we gave them ID cards, T-shirts, and showed them the decoder, within 2 days of walking around this area called Mzimhlophe, we recruited 60 people. And the fascinating thing, Duncan, is the majority of those people, when we went there, said, is this the government's initiative bringing me my free decoder? So there's a high awareness in South Africa that DGT is coming, but when is it coming? And we had to very quickly say, no, this is not the government initiative. This is a trial between ETV and Mnet to test digital terrestrial TV. So we deployed these decoders in people's homes. We used the Freeview decoder from the UK. It was the only T2 decoder, free-to-air decoder, that we could get quickly. So we bought them from retail, a couple hundred of them, and we installed them in Soweto. And that trial has been running very successfully since October, with hordes and hordes of VIPs, ministers, journalists from the SADC countries. Not lobbied, but just went there, saw it, saw the advantages, spoke to the end user, and I think that helped greatly decide the outcome in Lusaka of adopting T2. We were then quite bold, and technically we switched on a single frequency network on T2, the second single frequency network outside Sweden. We were 2 weeks after them, so we were leading in this field, and we have now a transmitter in Hillbrow, Randburg, Santon, and as of yesterday, Centec have come on board with us, and they've got a transmitter on Brixton, also running on 54, linked to our single frequency network. So the two network operators, Orbicom and ETV, have collaborated, and we've got this beautiful T2 network under trial at the moment.
Okay.
I understand that you've learned quite a few interesting things
that
you wouldn't have learned before. having been a paid-for subscription channel for so long, I understand you've learned quite a few things about non-paying subscribers.
Yes. I obviously work for a pay TV organization, and we typically aim at the higher LSM group. And ETV is very much the opposite. They're a commercial free-to-air broadcaster, and they span a much lower LSM and also high LSM. And in my arrogance, one of the typical things I did was, in a trial, you would set up a call center. So we started the T2 trial, and we had 60 of these households in Soweto. And ETV and Emmett put a nice little sticker over the decoder, and we put a bigger sticker on the side with our call center help desk number. Well, we deployed the decoders, and in 3 days we did the installations. We did quite a lot of outdoor antenna installations, and we can talk about that because it's quite an interesting and important issue. But we installed the decoders, and we offered them initially 18 channels, and we sat back, and I went to a call center every couple of days and said, give me a report, what's happening, and nothing came through. So I thought, well, that's great, the network is working well, everybody's happy, so be it. And then we started walking the beat after about a week and a half, and ProVantage and myself started walking to some of the houses, just chatting to them. And a number of very profound lessons came out. The first is that we didn't provide free-to-air services on the test bouquet. So we put up this antenna, and we put the decoder there, and we eliminated the access to free-to-air TV. Not in every place, but the conditions of reception might have been different. And we immediately realized that you can't carry on this trial without carrying some of the free-to-air services. So we had permission from SABC to put SABC 1, 2, and 3. Same story with Soweto TV. Very good service.
Community. I believe it's hugely popular. Yeah.
I watch it now myself, and it really, really is good for a community service. And yesterday I did a tour with one of the set-top box manufacturers, and the first two houses we went into, lo and behold, Soweto TV running. So good for them. But the call center had no calls, but there were clearly problems. We had signal loss problems. They were unhappy that the free-to-air services were not there. And when we spoke to these people in Soweto that have got T2 now, and why don't you phone this number? Two profound things come out. For 33 years of free-to-air TV in South Africa, there's never been a need to contact a call center. Because SABC doesn't have a call center, ETV doesn't have a call center, you've just got the service. Mm. So the culture of phoning somebody about TV has never been understood and never been needed in the past. So when we start migration in South Africa, one of the clever things the Zonga must do is prepare for how you do the communication, how you receive calls, and how you start training people or notifying them that they need to call somebody if they have a problem. A lot of these people in Soweto just had no TV for a week, to our horror. And asking them, why didn't you phone? They don't have a culture to phone a call center. And when they did phone the call center, is that our call center is not a free call center. A lot of these people run on a thing called Tiger 5, which is a 5 rand little SIM card on the phone per month, or sometimes a 12 rand. Or they have a thing called wire-to-wire service, which is a telecom, I didn't know about it, a telecom cable service that can only receive calls. Ooh. 120 rand a year, but you can't dial out. So if the elderly parents in the Eastern Cape have a problem, they can phone in, and then they can phone back via cell phone. So these trialists picked up the phone, phoned the call center, and we had a very quick system of, we didn't have IVR or anything, but by the time they got through to somebody, the whole month's cell phone subscription had gone. So a very interesting lesson learned there about the economic ability to use call centers and education about call centers. So yes, in short, I won't go into the detail, they love the 20 channels. The quality of T2 yesterday, the tour, the people we took through were astounded how good T2 standard definition quality is, MPEG-4. It's only running at 1.5 or less megabits per channel, but the quality is outstanding. And these people in Soweto have had old aerials, poor analog reception, grainy, ghosting, and overnight they've had 4 channels to 20 channels, beautiful digital standard definition, electronic program guide, 8-day guide, 2 interactive applications, and it's just a wow for them. But not to be facetious, it's an interesting learning curve. I was called out a couple of weeks ago, so we did a walk around some houses, and this gentleman said to me, my decoder doesn't change channels. So he thought, first thing, the decoder's gone faulty, picked up the remote, I felt it's a bit light. Opened it up and the batteries had gone. So there has been no need for using remotes. A lot of those TVs don't have remotes. So now you're giving a population of 10 million people a remote, and we have to question, how is this remote design going forward? So he wasn't aware that his little kids might have stolen the battery or something, and now he can't change it.
Whose responsibility is it to educate people on these things? This digital Zongo, which was created by the Department of Communications, is that the body that's going to have to go out there and educate people about digital TV?
We had a stakeholders meeting yesterday, ETV, SABC and ourselves, and Richard Waghorn from the SABC was involved in the Freeview in the UK, has profound experience about it. And as he says yesterday, the technical side, whether it's T2, how many transmitters, what network, has got nothing to do with the migration. This migration is about putting good content on a cheap set-top box and having a clever communication strategy and having cooperation with all the stakeholders. And really those 3 or 4 C's, cost, content, cooperation and communication, should be part of the DOC Project Office in the Department of Communications. I've been looking at technology and things like that, but when the migration starts, it's far more complex when you start looking at the 4 C's.
Great, good. Dave, I think we need to take a break at that point. We'll be back right after these messages.
Welcome aboard Voxair Teleconferencing, where you can enjoy first-class service at a fraction of the cost, without the wait or the jet lag. Just an automated, hassle-free way to connect with people wherever they are, and all the legroom you need. It's like being there without the hassle of getting there. So why travel for business when you can simply teleconference? Call 01-0001-0001 or visit voxair.co.za. Voxair Teleconferencing from Vox.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers. The internet. To put a man on the moon. Ignition sequence start. It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Virtual Access, ECN's latest cost-saving telecom service. Virtual Access is a single 0860 number, providing your customers with national access to your company, no matter how many branches you have or where your customers are calling from. If you are currently using or plan to use an 0860 number, you need to talk to ECN. Virtual Access is the best price single national number offering in the market. For more, visit ecntelecoms.com. ECN. Lowering the cost of doing business.
Welcome back to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Candace Jones and special guest Dave Hagen from Mnet. How's it, Dave?
Greetings again.
So we're talking about digital terrestrial television, and the I want to move on to the decoders now and talk a bit about what we can expect there. I know there was a lot of controversy around when we were looking at the standards process about how much these decoders were actually going to cost. Now, we've gone for the T2 standard, the second generation of the European standard. What is the implication thereof on decoder prices, and how will government's decisions around what the specification will be inside these boxes determine the price?
Okay, so South Africa went through a process called the SANS 862, South African Bureau of Standards, which defined the minimum decoder specification, and it was an 18-month very tedious, laborious process. You've got many stakeholders giving input. And as I said, cooperation is important, and it's important to get everybody's input. But it was a long process that almost took 18 months. What came out there was the SANS 862 specification. At the time said it was a standard definition, free-to-air T1 decoder, running MPEG-4. That's the compression system that compresses the video. It's far more efficient than MPEG-2. And the interactive application is a thing called MHEC-5, which is a royalty-free piece of software that sits on the decoder that lets you do interactive applications later on. Now with DVB-T2, the process has to go ahead to amend that standard to reflect T2, because the set-top box manufacturers are now very cautious of getting out of the starting blocks with all these delays that we've had for the last 3-4 years. So they will not do anything till the standard gets amended to T2.
So that has to go back to the SABS?
It has to go back to the SABS, to a working group called TC74. And the intention by all the stakeholders is to take that existing standard as is and amend it to T2. Don't open up a can of worms to start re-looking at it, because we'll sit here next year this time and we still won't have a standard. And this 2013 or 2015 date will just move out of the way. So the intention is to take that standard as is, adopt it for T2. There might be one or two slight amendments. As an example, what we've learned in Soweto is that you can buy active antennas, which has got a little amplifier in it, and the original specification doesn't have a 5-volt supply to it. But small amendments. And hopefully all the stakeholders get together and do that. The trick would be, again, is to keep that cost as low as possible. There are 10 million decoders going into South Africa. Half of them are going to be subsidized by government by 70%, which is not fully confirmed yet, but it is a very costly item. And the trick would be to make sure that those costs are kept to a minimum. There is debate already, should that decoder have high definition in it? Now that adds $8 plus $1.50 for the HDMI cable. But that debate has to be had. And the feeling is that a standard should be kept standard definition. And if a manufacturer wants to make a high definition version, as long as it adheres to the minimum specification, he can do an HD version. But those debates are going to come out.
Shouldn't we be going for HD as a default, given that even lower income households are starting to buy high definition TVs now?
Well, in Soweto, let's be quite honest, it's 60 people out of 10 million. You can't use it as a research base. But out of all those 60 homes, one had a flat screen. It wasn't high definition compliant. All of them are tube TV sets. And a lot of them don't even have AV inputs. They need RF connections and things. But the decoder, as we spec'd it, is designed exactly for that market. Yes, T2 does add cost. That cost was lobbied around at $9.60 US. And as the Sony chip, which is a demodulated chip for T2, gets integrated into all the chip manufacturers, by the time we launch, I think that delta would have dropped down to $4 or less.
Oh, right.
So it sounds, and during the lobby last year, they were banishing around $10, $11, $12. The fact is that it is a lot less already. There is massive take-up of T2 around the world. There's millions and millions of decoders being manufactured, and that cost, I think, will be $4, $5, worst case. And by the time we finished migration, it would have almost leveled out to the T cost.
So looking at an unsubsidized box, by the time December 2013, the final deadline rolls around, how much ballpark do you think we're likely to be paying, either in dollar or rand terms, for a decoder? Given the current spec that the SABS has put out.
So, as a thumbsuck,
yep.
I would say that you could get a $65 or less decoder. Okay. T2, not high definition, MPEG-4, all the interactive applications, remote, everything like that. If you want to add high definition, it might shoot up to $74. And then to get it into retail terms, you almost multiply it by 2. So by the time you put all the markups and things like it, that's the cost. So what's 6 sevens of 42, 420 Rand times 2, you get 800 Rand, which is not far off what we're hearing about the 700 Rand mark.
Yes.
And you put volumes of 3 million in per manufacturer, you can get down.
Okay. Now, I presume you're going to be able to buy TV decoder cards for your computers and all that sort of thing as well. This isn't going to be restricted to your lounge.
No, so at our first stakeholder meeting yesterday, IDTV came up, integrated TV decoders, and we decided yesterday to definitely pursue it. There will be a time when you don't have decoders on your TV set anymore. The decoder will be integrated into the display device. And we decided not to cloud the SANS process with that, conclude the SANS process for T2 straight after that's been adopted and manufacturers are out of the starting block, start another process to generate the specification for TVs with T2. And that standard should be very easy because it's now run by the display manufacturers, not by the set-top box manufacturers, and you can pick up those standards around the world and just adopt it in South Africa. But clearly that will be the way to go forward, is that decoders embedded or actually built into your TV set.
Okay.
So now, once I have a decoder in my house, what can I expect from MNET? What kind of content can we be looking forward to, if there are any plans for that just yet?
So from MNET's plans, non-existent. We have started many times doing business plans, analysis of T2. We're all suffering, not only MNET, but industry suffering from DTT fatigue. And till we get through this year ahead, we'll be only fire up a plan to say what content we would put on the bouquet. But simply, on a T2 MUX, you have 20 channels. SABC has to fill it with 18, 19, 20 channels. They could get clever and pack lots of radio services in, and radio is very, very sought after on the digital platform. But 10 stereo radio services take up one standard definition service. So you can pack hordes of radio stations in, which is great. And on our trial next week, we're launching some commercial stations to test it in Soweto. So you can have radio, you can have standard definition services. If the country wants to go high definition, very quickly, and we haven't done HD tests yet, we're going to start them shortly with ETV. It'll take 5 or 6 standard definition services for one HD service. So you could have lots and lots of channels, or you could have very few HD services. My personal opinion is that HD should come after migration. We're going to go through this migration with the cheapest box. Let's get this thing started. Let's get 10 million people migrated. Let's give them a nice plethora of good standard definition content. Then the box might be dated with features and things, come out with a second specification, and then have more multiplexes after migration that you could have HD services. And by then, the South African market would have started purchasing more and more HD services or HD TV sets. So yes, you can have HD, radio, electronic program guide, interactive applications. From MNET's perspective, 20 channels on MUX 2. We've only got 40% of the MUX, so we've got 8 channels. We have to carry our existing services, MNET and CSN. So that leaves us with 6 services. What we do with those 6 services, we don't know. Because we don't know what our market penetration is going to be and whose network we're going to use. So there could be opportunity there looking at different LSM groups, whether it's pay like we know it, we don't know. And then ETV would have another 50%, which is most probably 10 channels, 9, 10 channels.
Dave, I know a lot of people listening to this show, watching the show on the vodcast, will be interested in knowing when they'll be able to buy these decoders. Now, you say that we've got trial transmitters up already. Could I, as a consumer, go to an electronic shop, find a T2 box and start to play around and pick up these channels? How would that work? Could I import a box from overseas, or would I have to wait until there's some sort of official product on the market?
So the answer is yes. There is a trial running, and I believe Centec and SABC are also going to start T2 trials very shortly for a couple of months. T2 is complex. There's quite a lot of technical learning to do. But if you went to the UK and bought a Freeview box under your arm, plugged it in here, pushed the scan button, 10 seconds later you'll pick up 20 T2 services. Yes, they're running free-to-air at the moment. And the only reason why we're running free-to-air is that there's no T2 Edetta or encryption box just available in South Africa at the moment. And that's why we've kept the base so small from a program rights perspective. It's a very closed user group. But yes, you could.
So you discourage it, but you can do it.
No, absolutely, because that trial is being changed and is not a commercial service, and the channels you're going to get there will not be the channels you're going to get when we launch commercially. So there's a lot of work to go ahead before you start seeing decoders in retail, and we can talk about that timeline, but it's a long way off, my personal opinion.
Soonest?
So let me try and be succinct. There's about 7 key items that have tasks that have to happen from now onwards. We have to go back to the South African Bureau of Standards and amend the set of box standard to reflect T2. The transmission standard is T1, and you go back to the South African Bureau of Standards also. It's a TC standard, and they have to amend that with public comment period, and I would say that would take 3 months. The SANS process, if everybody sat around the table and agreed, let's keep it as is, with public comment period, the fastest you would do it is in 4 months. So February, March, April, May, June. Let's say by the 1st of July, you have got a transmission standard and you've got a set-top box standard. Then there's a fly in the ointment called set-top box control. This is the device that the government would like to put in the decoder that prevents grey imports coming to the country to protect local industry. And because half these decoders are being subsidized by the government, which is billions of rands, they worry that those decoders migrate across the border to neighboring countries and get used on our subsidy in other countries. Now, all the countries around us, except Botswana and Angola, are all T2 at the moment. The suit to everybody. So it's possible that decoder could come in my car tomorrow and go and work in Zimbabwe or in Lesotho. So they've implemented they're trying to implement a system called set-top box control that does three things. Stops grey imports to stimulate and look after local manufacture. Prevent decoders going across the border. And somehow to address them, that you can send out national alerts if about flooding down a river and things like that. And that process is run by ETV and SABC. And that has a profound effect. No set-top box manufacturer is going to start till he understands what this software system in the decoder is. And they've started that process already. They need to go out on an RFP and set up a joint venture. And last time it took months and months to go. So I'm being very optimistic. By the 1st of July, you'll have a SANS process with a set-top box standard. But if that happened from the 1st of July, the decoder guys then would start manufacturing, and that's most probably on risk. Are they going to get a seed order to get the ball rolling, or are those manufacturers going to say, I'm happy with this piece of paper, I'm going to go? And to generate a decoder these days, it takes you 8 to 9 months by the time that decoder comes out of the factory and you start seeing it in retail. There is such a demand for electronic components worldwide for decoders that it's not the expensive chips, it's even the small little components have got huge lead times. So you're going to go July, August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. So by April next year, that thing, those decoders are coming off the production line. As I said to somebody, 9,000 per day for 3 years non-stop, feeding 10 million homes. And then hopefully goes into retail, and then people can start buying them. By then you want the content up, you want all the other processes concluded. So that's an optimistic look. It could be further delays, one hopes not, but the feeling I'm getting from the Department of Communications is that they want to expedite this fast. The minister's given a date of November 2013.
I think it's December.
December 2013.
It was November 2011. It was set by the previous communications minister.
It's December 2013.
It was December 2013.
What is 20? Is that the start or the stop? The end of
dual illumination.
The end of dual illumination.
As far as I understand.
I think you're right. So that's tough. Middle of next year, you get a decoder out. It gives you 2012, 6 months, 2013, 18 months to move 10 million decoders.
For our viewers who don't know what dual illumination is, it's the period where broadcasters will broadcast both analog and digital TV to their customers. So,
yeah, both transmitter networks are running, the old analog and the digital network.
Taking lots of spectrum.
Lots of spectrum. And it gives people time to, if the content is good, to buy a decoder and move to the digital service. When everybody's moved, you close down those city by city.
Okay. We actually have a firm deadline of mid-2015 to convert, according to the International Telecommunications Union. If we miss that deadline, then what? Speaking hypothetically.
So that date, 17th of June, I think it is?
Yes.
17th of June, 2015, is a date that has been set up by all the Region 1 countries. Not all. Some countries have been given concession to 2020.
Sorry, Dave, what are the Region 1 countries?
It's all of Africa, all of Europe.
Oh, okay.
So
it's like the DVDs.
It's like the DVD
zone.
Yes. All right.
Yeah.
But Africa, rest of Africa is excluded in DVD zone too, I think.
Oh, I'm pissy.
So it's the whole of region one countries need to, the analog protection ends then. So it doesn't mean you have to be finished. It just says that if I am if I'm still analog in South Africa and I'm interfering with a digital service in Botswana, I can't go to the ITU and lay a complaint, because on the 17th of June 2015, I have no jurisdiction or leg to stand on to say there's interference anymore. So the protection of analog frequencies in Region 1 terminates then. Believe you me, I think Africa, and hopefully not South Africa, will creep not well past, but into that period.
Great, great. Candice, is there anything else you want to touch on DCT while we've got Dave here?
No, I think that was pretty much everything that we've had covered.
Okay. Last question from my side, Dave. I just really wanted to ask about how much investment is required here. We've heard figures about Centec having already invested hundreds of millions of rand in the original DVB-T standard. Does that investment and the investment that the commercial broadcasters have made in the original DVB-T technology, does that have to be forklifted out now and replaced with DVB-T2 equipment, or can you continue to use that equipment into the new generation standard?
So two things change from the migration from T to T2. We spoke about the decoder. The decoder is backward compatible. A T2 decoder can pick up T1 services, but all the satellite countries are going T2, so there will be very little, if any, T1 transmissions. So it's given us a great opportunity to leapfrog from a first generation to a second generation. So this delay has been positive in some aspects. If there wasn't this delay, we'd be doing T1. But from a transmitter network perspective, it's a very, very small change. The transmitter that's standing on a mountain or in a building radiating this RF, the device that makes a T1 is a small little box in the rack at the transmitter site. That box gets pulled out, gets disposed of or sold to somebody else, and you put a new exciter in which generates this modulation parameter which makes the T2 transmission. And those boxes are costly, complex boxes, but it's a very, very small percentage of the investment. And typically we worked out it's about 9% of the cost of your investment of your network. So if your network cost 100 million rand, 9% cost would be to remove that box and put a T2 exciter in. So investment is small and it's very quick. Discussions with Centec already, and they have not formal discussions, but they say it's a 6-month process to pull out, plug in, retune, set up, and off you go again.
Because Centec is quite far along with their antenna rollout. I think it was between 60 and 80% the last time I saw.
60, they say.
But yes.
So Centec haven't spoken to their customers as yet, ETV and Mnet, nor the SABC, but we've had discussions last year with Centec, and they have made known that the investment is a transmitter network to 60% of the population of South Africa, which is definitely in all the main metropoles. They've got two transmitters, MUX1 and MUX2, sitting there. When we did one of the demonstrations of ISDBT on the mountain, I think Duncan was there with us. We saw the actual transmitters, MUX1 and MUX2, sitting there ready. So you just pull out those exciters, push T2 exciters in.
That's great news.
Excellent. Well, Dave, thank you so much for coming in and chatting to us.
It was great. Yeah, really nice indeed.
That's awesome. I think the listeners and viewers of this podcast are really going to enjoy this discussion, and it'd be great to have you in again.
Fantastic.
Perhaps a bit later this year, once we've made some progress down the digital migration path and get an update on how things are.
Only a pleasure.
Are progressing. But thanks very much for stopping by. There's been plenty of other news over the last week, but I think, Candice, we're going to hold that over to the next week's podcast. I think this special edition on DTT has been absolutely fascinating.
Absolutely.
So next week we're going to touch on the updates on the Johannesburg municipality's broadband network rollout, also look at the mudslinging between MTN and MTN and Cell C at the Advertising Standards Authority, talk a bit about Neotel's new CEO and the launch of the iPad finally in South Africa.
But, you going to go buy one?
Am I going to buy an iPad?
You have to. I won't sell it. It's the most fantastic device out.
Dave is off to the.
I take it you have one.
I have one. Yeah, it is fantastic.
I've decided personally that I'm going to wait for the iPad 2 because this.
Maybe you're right.
There's so much speculation at the moment that it's Apple's going to announce it at any
time. Yeah, very shortly. Mm-hmm. It lacks one or two things, the iPad, like a camera and things like that, but it is a great device.
Yeah, I mean, for a first-generation product, it was actually pretty amazing.
Spot on.
Although we had Aki Anastasiou from 702 in here 2 weeks ago, and he's just come back from CES in Las Vegas, where he was looking at this huge range of tablets that are coming out.
25. different tablets came out.
Something like that, yes.
Wow.
And he was very excited about some of the Android tablets that are coming out.
Yeah, like I think so. Big competitor to Apple.
Motorola Zoom.
The Motorola Zoom, the BlackBerry Playbook. The BlackBerry Playbook. I think this market's going to get very competitive this year. So before I haul up my credit card, I think I might just
step back. Oh, exciting times. Lovely.
Yeah, great. Excellent. Well, just before we sign off, just a reminder that you can, if you have feedback on the show, you can email us at info@techcentral.co.za. We are using a super duper new fancy mic this week, which we've ordered from Amazon, recommended by Simon Dingle and our friends at over at the ZA Tech Show. They're using this mic on the ZA Tech Show podcast. If you don't know the ZA Tech Show, do go check it out. It's released every, I think it's Monday or Tuesday morning at zatech.co.za or zatechshow.co.za. We'd love to hear your feedback on what you think of the quality of the audio this week. Has it improved? What other respects can we improve the show for you? Thanks again for listening, and we will chat to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.